93 Philadelphia.
From the Piazza Premium Automobile Studios, powering your drive with 10 brands and 20 locations.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Live and local with Matt Rooney on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
A big week in the history of 1210 WPHT and the Matt Rooney Show, ladies and gentlemen. We moved. So I guess in a way this is our housewarming show. Don't worry, you don't have to get us a gift. I am the aforementioned Matt Rooney. We welcome you back to another edition of our little show that could... We now have a new time slot. I teased it last week. We have moved our broadcast to Saturday night. So if you listen to the Matt Rooney Show the old-fashioned way, that's when this program will be blasted out all across the Delaware Valley. Of course, you can also check out our podcast over in the Odyssey app, Spotify, yada, yada, yada. But we're now on Saturdays. Very excited about that. Saturday night is always a popping night in the Delaware Valley and everywhere. People are running around, enjoying their lives, and of course, most of the time, they're driving. So we want you to tune in to the Matt Rooney Show if what I just described fits your situation. Take us with you on Saturdays. But of course, always listen to us via the podcast whenever you have the opportunity. Appropriate to make some big moves, Sean, now that the Matt Rooney Show is almost 4 years old.
Wow, it's been 4 years?
Yeah, it's been 4 years. I went to law school because I hate math. I can only count in 6-minute intervals because that's how we bill people. But yeah, I think the first program was July 2021.
Wow, I was surprised actually because... you know, that's around the same amount of time that I started working at PHT.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sean's so young. He was in third grade when the Matt Rooney Show started in 2021. but being the kid genius that he is, he now knows how to operate the board, and he's one of our most excellent producers here at the station. So lovely to be with you again, pal.
I appreciate it, and it's always a pleasure working with you, too, because we always have a fun time on the show.
We always do, and this episode's going to be no exception. We're going to be joined a little later in the program by one of the most outspoken conservative members of the New Jersey State Legislature, my pal Vicky Flynn of the 13th Legislative District out there in Monmouth County, the Jersey Shore, which in just a little bit of time here will be buzzing with tourists from PA and beyond heading down to play out on the boardwalk, right? They're going to play on the boardwalk. They're going to eat funnel cake. They're going to enjoy the great beaches of the great Garden State and hopefully spend a lot of money in the process, folks. Phil Murphy has not managed our affairs well, so we need every little bit of extra scratch that we can get. You may have even heard that it looks like we are now in the midst of a New Jersey Transit strike. New Jersey trains not running. And that's because Phil Murphy will not pay the conductors what they want in terms of a salary increase. You've got something like 350,000 regular daily riders, Sean, in the Garden State that need to figure out a new plan come Monday unless something gets figured out over the course of the weekend. So we are accepting donations in New Jersey, folks, at least until we can get a better governor, hopefully at the end of this year. Can I do a shameless plug, Sean? It is my show, so I think it's not out of the realm of appropriateness for me to do so. Obviously, you can listen to the Matt Rooney Show on Saturdays. You can listen to me via our app. But you can also check me out this week. There's the third and final Republican gubernatorial debate coming up. It's on Tuesday night in Newark. I can share some information for you via my X handle, Matt Rooney NJ, where you can find it and you can watch, because unfortunately, even though we do have an audience, most of you are not going to be able to be there. Yes, notwithstanding the fact that Donald Trump has now endorsed a candidate, the debate shall go on. and we're excited about it. It's going to be Bill Spadia, former radio host from Central Jersey, State Senator John Bramnick from Union County, and the man that Donald Trump endorsed, Jack Cittarelli. That endorsement coming this week. I can't say that it upended the race, Sean, because Jack Cittarelli was considered the heavy favorite before President Trump dropped a post over on True Social declaring that Jack had his unequivocal support. But most watchers think that this more than likely drives the final nail in the coffin of the Spadia campaign. And I have to address this. I have remained an impartial broker throughout this entire New Jersey gubernatorial affair. Partially because, hey, I think it's the appropriate way to be because I have a website, savejersey.com. I'm a host and I'm a panelist for this upcoming debate. I don't want any of you seriously questioning whether or not I'm genuinely trying to get the best answers out of these guys. I don't want you to think I have any ulterior motive because I don't. My stated mission since I founded Save Jersey in 2008 has been, well, it's in the name of the website, to save Jersey. Notwithstanding all of that, in the wake of this Trump endorsement, most of the comments have been overwhelmingly positive from Trump world towards Mr. Cittarelli, including Mr. Cittarelli supporters, and that's understandable. I've seen some backers of the other candidates saying, never Jack. They don't like him. They're not sufficiently convinced that he is conservative enough, America First enough, MAGA enough, whatever. I'm going to give you all a warning out there on my side of the river, over in the Dirty Jurors. Be careful here. Right? It wasn't that long ago we were grappling with never Trumpism, right? Republicans, independents who leaned right, that were in the GOP coalition, who because they had a personal objection to Donald Trump, a policy objection to Donald Trump, maybe it was just one issue, or maybe they just didn't like the cut of his jib or something he put up on what was then called Twitter, they decided that they could not and refused to coalesce around the movement that he was building. They either voted Democratic or they held their nose and they didn't participate at all. Luckily, it didn't matter in President Trump's case because he built a new coalition that invited new people into the tent. But in New Jersey, even with all of the recent gains Republicans have made, Democrats in New Jersey, Sean, still outnumber registered Republicans by about 800,000. 800,000, that's more than the population of some small states. No small hurdle. Now, Republicans are gaining ground, but we can't afford to be obstinate here, folks. I mean, do you think that any of the Democrats participating in the upcoming June 10th primary, if their guy or gal doesn't win, do you think that they're going to stay home? No. No, these wackadoo, gender-confused, far-left socialists are going to return their ballots. They're going to vote out of anger because they don't like Donald Trump. They don't like where he's taking our country. They don't candidly like America and the principles it embodies. So you can count on them rallying behind the Democrat nominee, even if it wasn't their preferred choice. Republicans, it's like herding cats. Now, I'm not telling anyone who to vote for. Again, that's not my job. It's not what I do. I have a fairly large head, Sean. I have trouble getting fitted for hats. It's a real pain in the keister. But I'm not so arrogant as to think that my endorsement's necessarily going to sway you anyway. But listen, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good here. If New Jersey does not make a change in 2025, much like what we saw for the country in 2024, I'm not sure we're going to be able to claw back. The economic situation in New Jersey is dire. Dire. At a time when the rest of the country is thriving, as President Trump reforms our economic system and implements new policies which are generating American prosperity, the Garden State continues to limp behind the rest of the states. It's unacceptable. And if it gets to the point where we have another far left governor who doubles down on these ruinous policies, high taxes to pay for state workers, and for far left priorities. I'm not sure the 2029 New Jersey gubernatorial election will matter all that much. So I'm not trying to lecture anyone. I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm just saying as we have another debate, the final debate coming up here this week, next week, as we come down the stretch, the final stretch, the final few weeks of this New Jersey gubernatorial election, keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your head screwed on straight. Remember what we are trying to do here. We are trying to build and advance a sustainable movement. If we get bogged down in internal conflicts and personality disputes, and my feelings are hurt because my guy didn't win, or I don't agree with the guy that did grab the brass ring 100% of the time, that is effectively a vote for the party that is driving New Jersey into the ground from which, as I say, it may never emerge. So take that for what it's worth, a word of warning. That was negative. Can I give you some positive news? I hope I can. I know you like it. There's a new Emerson poll out this week of the Great Garden State, and there's a lot of fun nuggets in there. I encourage you to read it and check it out. It'll give you some insight not just into what's happening in New Jersey, but also the country as a whole. But here's really one I want to dig down on, Sean, and this is going to raise some eyebrows out there in the 1210 WPHD audience. The resistance is flagging in New Jersey badly. And of course, when I say the resistance, I'm not referring to Disney intellectual property here. I'm talking about the lefties with their purple and pink hair out there trying to key and damage Teslas that have deluded themselves into thinking that opposing Donald Trump is somehow an act of valor, okay? This is New Jersey. Remember, we have not voted for a Republican for president since 1988. It's been that long. You think you've got problems, our friends in Pennsylvania? Come to New Jersey. It's been that long of a drought. But Donald Trump, of course, got under 6 points in 2024, the closest any Republican has finished in that state running for president since 1992. And now look at this latest poll. I'm going to read directly from the Emerson polling report. 53% of voters prefer the next governor of New Jersey to work with, I'm going to emphasize that again for anyone hard of hearing, with the Trump administration, while 47% prefer the next governor to stand up to the Trump administration. So that's right. A supposedly blue state, one that has not voted for a Republican for president in the lifetime of some of the people listening to this program, a majority of them, by 6 points, want the next governor to work with Donald Trump. Now, according to the polling executive director over there at Emerson, Spencer Kimball, he said Democrats want the next governor to stand up to Trump, 76% of them. While Republicans want the next governor to work with Trump, 90% of them. This is the key part, because unaffiliated voters, you sometimes call them independents, remain the largest single voting bloc in New Jersey. Independents align more with Republicans in wanting the governor to work with the president at 60%, compared to 40% who want the governor to stand up to the president. Incredible. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's approval rating is even. 47% approve, 47% disapprove. This isn't just big or huge, as the man himself might say. This is historic. Something is continuing to happen out there across the fruited plains, folks. And I say continue because you saw it last year. A realignment is clearly underway. Well, there's no indication, at least based on this poll, that realignment has arrested. You have states like New Jersey, once reliably blue, my homeland, now all of a sudden firmly moving into purple territory. And Jack Cittarelli, the current frontrunner for the gubernatorial nomination, by the way, this same poll has him up 26 points in the Republican primary. Remember, he only lost by 3 points last time. Approximately 80-some thousand votes. Republicans have significantly, by a factor of two or three times, closed the registration gap by that by that margin since the last election. So something is happening out there. Now is the time to unite. To unite. Vote for who you want on June 10th. Cheer for whoever you'd like in the upcoming primary debates. There's a Democrat one on Sunday night. There's the Republican one I mentioned next week on Tuesday. But at the end of the day, folks, if you're in New Jersey, remember, every great change in our politics in modern times starts in New Jersey. We were the crossroads of the American Revolution 250 years ago. In 1992, right? Bill Clinton won, 93. Jim Florio got fired in New Jersey. Next year, Newt Gingrich's Republican Revolution. Christie wins in 09 in New Jersey. Next year, 2010, the Tea Party Revolution. The time is now. Put your stuff aside. The word I want to use, I can't use on FCC-regulated airwaves. And remember what we're trying to accomplish here. That's all I got to say about it. I'm going to go ahead and share that on X, by the way. So remember, you can check me out, Matt Rooney NJ. That's my handle. Very interesting poll. If you think, Sean, that Trump is even in New Jersey, that he's not ahead, probably significantly in states like Pennsylvania that are even less blue, you're kidding yourself. He is popular. And we're going to talk on tonight's program about some of the reasons why I think the president's polling position is once again heading in a positive direction. And of course, much more. We're going to be joined by Vicki Flynn. I'm also going to talk a little bit about Bruce Springsteen, someone from New Jersey who I have less nice things to say about. I've joked about it many times. Bruce Springsteen, every song is the same. He, in a constipated tone, drones on and on about gypsies and knives and driving on highways. Yes, it's okay music, Sean, when you're headed to the Jersey Shore and you're trying to get in the mood. But why this man continues to think, this aging, increasingly sad-looking baby boomer, why he thinks any of us want his opinion when deciding how to feel about issues of public affairs. Back to our conversation about arrogance. Clearly, he's one of the most arrogant performers in the history of his medium. And we got plenty more planned for this episode of The Matt Rooney Show. So buckle up, have some caffeine. If you're like me and you have multiple cups a day, there's no harm in it. And we'll be back here in just a moment.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
I was texting with a friend offline here who's a fan of Bruce Springsteen. They asked me, don't you get hate, Matt, whenever you complain about Bruce? You're from New Jersey. Doesn't everyone from Jersey love Bruce? Like many things in modern America, it depends who you ask. And a lot of it is generational. I said it before, Sean. I don't hate Bruce's music. I always kind of equated to Jimmy Buffett's music. And again, some parrot heads out there, RIP Jimmy, right, are going to take issue with this. But Jimmy Buffett music to me is something that is restricted in terms of your ability to enjoy it to a certain environment or a certain set of activities. If I'm sitting on a beach and it's nice summery weather and I've got a cool cocktail in my hand, which you can't do at the Jersey Shore, by the way, folks. So you're going to have to go to an island or another state to do that. Go down to the Carolinas or something. If you're in that type of environment under those circumstances, yeah, I like Jimmy Buffett. But I'm not on a rainy day in March going to listen to Cheeseburger in Paradise. It's just, it doesn't do anything for me. Bruce is the same way. If it's the summer and it's July and it's hot and I'm sitting in bumper to bumper traffic with a bunch of other broken down heroes on a last chance power drive en route to a shore point, yeah, Bruce is contextually appropriate, but it's not great music. He sounds like he is straining, like he needs some stool softener. And his lyrics, it's a very limited word cloud. So it's a sound, right? That Jersey Shore sound that Bruce has. He's not a great artist. He's not a great poet, but he's made a career out of advancing his brand and having admittedly very energetic concerts. So you're allowed to like Bruce. You're allowed to like Bruce, but the idea that he is on the same level as some of the great innovators in the history of the American musical canon. It's just not true. I'll go to the mat over this one. Am I being less than generous, Sean?
No, I think you're being honest. I mean, Bruce Springsteen, he have his moments. Like, I'm not really a huge fan of him as well, but I definitely understand what you mean. Like, certain moments where you want to play certain artists and stuff like that, it fits the vibe at the current moment. So, yeah, those long driving drives, yeah, I can see somebody want to play a Bruce song.
Right. And I've been to a few of his concerts, and they can be fun. But he continues to wade into politics. And this is why I say it depends who you ask concerning their opinion of Bruce's music. This is another thing in American politics. It's becoming very generational. Baby boomers, who the recent election and recent polling are to the left of their children and their grandchildren, remarkably, they love Bruce. If you are a millennial or a Gen Z, or especially a millennial or Gen Z or male, you're much less likely to care about Bruce Springsteen's music, let alone his politics. But he keeps trying to shove this stuff down the throat of people who pay confiscatory ticket prices to go and see him in concert. And we had another example recently of Bruce lecturing people that pay to hear him sing, don't necessarily hear to pay him expound on politics. We have the clip, Sean, from his concert. I'll give you more information after you listen to this, but go ahead, listen.
What cut is it?
This is cut... Oh, you're asking me to do math or know my own show sheet?
Yeah.
This is cut numero uno.
Oh, all right. Let's play it right now.
That won't bow down to their ideological demands. They're removing residents off American streets and without due process of law are deporting them to foreign detention centers and prisons. This is all happening now. The majority of our elected representatives have failed to protect the American people from the abuses of an unfit president and a rogue government. They have no concern or idea of what it means to be deeply American. The America that I've sung to you about for 50 years is real. And regardless of its faults, it's a great country with a great people. So we'll survive this moment. Now, I have hope because I believe in the truth of what the great American writer James Baldwin said.
It goes on and on from there. And I want you to listen to this program. I don't want you to fall asleep. So we're gonna cut that old man off at the pass before he goes on any longer. But here's what you need to know. You heard the cheers, right, Sean? And it wasn't, you know, overwhelming. You could tell there were a lot of people at the concert who were probably checking their phone or waiting for him to be done. Was that concert held in the Meadowlands, Philadelphia, New York City, maybe somewhere in the Midwest? Nope. Manchester, England. That's right. Bruce Springsteen went overseas to the UK, where you can go to jail over a salty Facebook post or X tweet or whatever we're calling them these days. He went overseas, 1 year removed from America's 250th birthday, to badmouth his own country to the Brits. And he's got the nerve to call Donald Trump treasonous? Yeah. But look, let's focus on the right thing here. In order for an aging, increasingly talentless hippie boomer like Bruce to get a reaction, any kind of positive reaction, for his political views, you got to go overseas. because the working man that Bruce Springsteen has not been for a long, long time. This is a guy that's been a gazillionaire since he was a teenager. The working man he always sings about has long since deserted his Democrat Party and is now firmly in the camp of Donald Trump and America First. So, in a sense, he's not just dancing in the dark at this point, Sean. He's also screaming into the dark. And very few people are listening to him. But the president, of course, couldn't resist the urge to lay into Springsteen and did so in particularly and characteristically colorful fashion over on Truth Social. This is what the president posted. I see that highly overrated Bruce Springsteen goes to a foreign country to speak badly about the president of the United States. Never liked him, never liked his music or his radical left politics, and importantly, he's not a talented guy, just a phony, obnoxious jerk who fervently supported crooked Joe Biden, a mentally incompetent fool. If somebody made a coffee table book of Trump's posts, and they may have already, I will buy it. Just throwing that out there. And our worst ever president who came close to destroying our country. If I wasn't elected, it would have been gone by now. Not untrue. Sleepy Joe didn't have a clue as to what he was doing. But Bruce Springsteen is dumb as a rock and couldn't see what was going on, or could he, which is even worse. This dried out prune of a rocker. His skin is all atrophied. Ought to keep his mouth shut until he gets back into the country. That's just standard fare. Then we'll all see how it goes for him. You will never, ever, 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 whoever succeeds Donald Trump as president, have someone in the Oval Office who is adept at the art of the slam, the verbal slam, as Donald Trump. His like will never be seen again in this country. But look, in between all of that, read in between the lines there, the president's point about Donald Trump, about Bruce Springsteen is not off base whatsoever. Now, Trump himself is in his 70s, right? But Trump represents a Republican movement that is suddenly young and youthful and growing. Many immigrants that came here legally have joined the president's camp. Many residents and members of populations that have been long abused and misused and lied to by the Democrat Party are now coming over to his camp. I shared with you that Emerson poll, which if Donald Trump is pretty much tied in job approval in New Jersey, I got news for you. There's a lot of people that don't look like Matt Rooney who are now on his side. And young people, young Americans who see what baby boomers like Joe Biden and Bruce Springsteen have to offer the world, right? They've decided no thanks. Not interested. We don't have homes that we can afford. We don't have groceries we can buy. We don't have opportunities to take advantage of like our parents and our grandparents did. We want better. We want more. And what does a guy like Bruce Springsteen have to offer? Just the same old, ridiculous, worn out, tired rhetoric that has been disproven in the court of public opinion because those ideas have failed in practice. And by the way, I said Biden's a baby boomer. I think technically, Sean, he's silent generation. That's how ancient Joe Biden is. So if you're silent, if you're a part of the silent generation, I think the end point of that is the end of World War II. So wow. it would have been 1945. Right, which makes sense because then the GIs all came home. They got busy in more ways than one, and they made a lot of babies. Biden was born a couple years shy of being a baby boomer. He was born in, let's double check this. I was going to say 41. He was born in 42. He was born at the start of the war. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, in case he hasn't reminded you 360 times. Scranton, Pennsylvania, the kind of place that Bruce Springsteen has sung about. But those folks have left him, and they've left him for good reason. So, you know, as much as Bruce annoys me and I've listened to less and less of his music over the years, I try to separate my politics from my entertainment preferences because to some degree you have to. Also, who wants to be a bore that applies political litmus tests to everything, right? You got to come up for air. You got to appreciate people sometimes, even if they don't agree with you in a social or familial or friendship context. But it's gotten harder and harder to do with Bruce because of how obnoxious he is. In a sense, though, I hope he continues spouting off. I hope he keeps running his mouth. A lot of people online telling him to shut up and sing. I want that 30-something couple, maybe working on their first kids, but still can't afford a house. They're living in an apartment, can't afford anything, grappling with student loans. I want them to hear the voice of the generation that screwed them over. I want them to hear it. I want them to have a visual. And it looks like Bruce Springsteen. Not going to apologize for that. You're listening to The Matt Rooney Show, ladies and gentlemen, here on 1210 WPHD. Remember, you can check us out on Saturday nights. That's when we broadcast our episodes. You can also get us over on our podcast on Spotify. I know we've had a ton of signups. We really appreciate all your support. Make sure that you go to one of the major podcast channels, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, wherever it is that you listen to this stuff, and subscribe to the show. It helps us. It's a tangible, visible sign that the Matt Rooney Show is continuing to grow by leaps and bounds. We greatly appreciate your support. And again, Saturday nights, we will air our program 7 to 9 p.m., which will now be a part of Sean's routine when he's getting ready to work one of his 13 jobs, or a rare Saturday when he has off and he's going out on the town and he's getting all spiffied up. I know you're going to be listening to my podcast while you're getting ready.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm going to try to check it out, you know, give myself something to listen to while I'm getting dressed.
Do you like listening to yourself on the radio?
On and off. I mean, I got used to hearing my voice on the radio. You know how they had that old saying, some people can't stand how they sound.
I don't like listening to myself.
I got used to it. Like, I mean, sometimes I'll be like, maybe I could have said this a little bit different. But most of the time I got used to actually hearing how I sound and stuff like that.
Oh, it drives me nuts. And there's science behind why you don't like the sound of your own voice. Something about it is psychological, apparently. Yeah. But ultimately, it's physics, right? So when sound travels through the air, for whatever reason, it sounds differently to our ears than when those reverberations you're putting into the air interact with somebody else's skull. Why that is, the exact science of it. I was a poli-sci major, folks, so I'm not going to be able to help you out there. But that's part of the reason why you don't like it, because it's weird, because it doesn't sound on a radio broadcast, TV, a podcast, like it sounds to you. It freaks you out, I think.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I definitely do see what you mean. Yeah. I have my give and take sometimes. Sometimes I try to, like, rush it past myself from listening to myself, but other times kind of got a little used to it. It depends on how much I'll be ranting. If I rant a lot, I try not to listen to too much.
Well, on this show, I probably make you talk more than on any other program you assist with, 1210 WPHD. So you can thank me for that, as you already do. You're listening, though, to the Matt Rooney Show. And hopefully you like the sound of our voices. I'm assuming you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening here on 1210 WPHD. Let's take a quick time out because I need more coffee. I've only had a few cups today. But don't worry. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't move a muscle.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHD On Demand.
President Trump has a lot of memorable speeches on the books, folks. But what he said this week in Saudi Arabia, it may be, at least at this early stage of his second term in the White House, it may be his most consequential address. Or at least the one that I think best summarizes what makes him so much different than other modern presidents on both sides of the aisle. And I hope you are tracking his trip to the Middle East. It's been awesome across the board. You've got Theo Vaughn rallying the troops. Let me tell you something. Theo Von ain't no Bob Hope, Sean. the GIs of my grandparents' generation would not recognize his sense of humor, but he was pretty hilarious, and he definitely got them smiling. But President Trump, everywhere he goes in the Middle East, he's being greeted as a hero. The Burj Khalifa was even lit up with the pattern of the American flag. Did you see that? It's unbelievable. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Burj Khalifa is a massive, massive building over in Dubai. It is somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, a half a mile high. Imagine, if you haven't seen it, look it up online. That's the benefit of the Google, folks. You can look this stuff. You don't have to take my word for it. It's a marvel of modern infrastructure. And I think it's still the world's tallest structure as we speak here today, lit up with the American flag, a beautiful sight. And of course, some of the president's usual detractors are out there making the usual accusations, you know, saying, oh, you know, Trump is selling out to the Middle East, to these despots, to these people that don't respect human rights. President Trump is doing what he's supposed to do as a leader of the free world, which is interface with the world, advance our interests, and advocate for American values and principles. And he's also resetting our relationship with the world. Not in the way that Barack Obama attempted to do in the lead up to the Arab Spring, which was essentially signaled to the world that America intended to step back from its role as a superpower. That's not what President Trump is doing. He can explain it better than I ever could. I want to share this clip with you. This is cut, I believe, numero dos, Sean, for our bilingual listeners out there on 1210 WPHD. This is President Trump speaking at the Saudi U.S. Investment Forum. Listen up.
In recent years, far too many American presidents have been afflicted with the notion that it's our job to look into the souls of foreign leaders and use U.S. policy to dispense justice for their sins. They loved using our very powerful military, and now it's really the most powerful it's ever been. We just are getting a budget approved, $1 trillion, highest budget we've ever had in history for military, $1 trillion. And we're getting the greatest missiles, the greatest weapons. And, you know, I hate to do it, but you have to do it because we believe in peace through strength. You have to have the strength. Otherwise, bad things could happen. But hopefully, we'll never have to use any of those weapons. Seems to be an awfully big waste of money if you're never going to use them. But hopefully, we'll never have to use them because the destructive power of some of those weapons are like nobody's seen before. I believe it is God's job to sit in judgment, my job to defend America and to promote the fundamental interest of stability, prosperity, and peace. That's what I really want to do.
Whew. I'll tell you. I mean, again, has anyone ever articulated America first more powerfully, more accurately, and to greater effect? He's essentially, if I can break that down for you, telling not just that room, but the entire Middle East and the world that we have the capability to kick your rear end, but we don't want to do that because we are not in the business, as Trump said, paraphrasing, judging men's souls. We're here to advance our interests, American interests, and to advocate for the principles that we believe in. Now, this is one of the number one reasons why they hate Donald Trump. You know this. It's one of the reasons why the deep state hates him. It's probably one of the reasons why the deep state has come after him, not just politically and from a public relations point of view. Let's face it, we still don't know why they tried to take Donald Trump out. Would I be surprised to learn that the deep state was behind some of it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But they hate him for this, and it's such a contrast to the former leaders that the deep state loved, at least when they were doing what the deep state wanted and serving deep state interests instead of the interests of the American people. Remember George Bush, who is now, in contrast to President Trump, treated as some kind of sage, some kind of restrained, logical, rational president relative to this buffoon we currently have? That's how the media presents him. That's how some elements of the left now attempt to rewrite George W. Bush's legacy? Remember when he said, I looked into Putin's eyes and I saw a soul, I trusted him? Meanwhile, engaging in, as George Will once called it, orchid building, nation building across the Middle East, which failed spectacularly. Donald Trump is the one who's supposed to look poorly in that comparison. The proof is in the pudding, folks. George W. Bush was naive, and he led us down a path which weakened the United States, did not strengthen it. And then, of course, my absolute favorite of all time, Barack Obama, another guy who is presented as being smarter than Donald Trump. Remember when he told, I think he was then President Medvedev of Russia, you know, Putin's number two. He told him, you can have more flexibility, or I'll have more flexibility after the election. We have upgraded beyond our capacity to understand how much better our fortunes are with President Trump back in the White House. And as a result, once again, we are leading the world because we are projecting strength and clarity. The American president needs to speak with clarity, and our goals have to be clear for the rest of the world. When Barack Obama was president and our number one foreign policy priority was to project weakness, predictably chaos ensued. You got the Arab Spring. Russia engaged in incursions in Eastern Europe, much like we would later see once again to disastrous effect during Joe Biden's tenure, right? It was during Barack Obama's administration that Ukraine lost Crimea. It was under Biden that they invaded Ukraine proper. George W. Bush also had to deal with Putin during his term in office. President Trump remains the only president of the 21st century, that has not seen Russia invade Europe. Why might that be? Because you have to speak with clarity. These leaders, some of them may be evil, some of them may be crazy, self-interested. None of them are stupid, or at least most of them aren't. And they understand Donald Trump. And because they understand him, they correctly fear him. But some people are still slow to awakening to this reality. They still choose to believe that Donald Trump, because he speaks in an unorthodox fashion, somehow that implies that there isn't a rationale behind everything he does. This is an incredibly calculating man. It's a talented man. He's a deal maker. And as a result of the deals he's making and the power he's projecting, the strength he's projecting, we are now safer. We are safer for it. That doesn't mean we're still not going to have challenges ahead. Of course we are. Of course we are. But we finally have a leader again. We finally have a president again. And oh, what a wonderful thing that is. So we're going to continue to track President Trump and his progress, of course, in the days and weeks to come, not just here at home domestically, but also in the foreign policy front. I'm expecting more trade deals. We've got to deal with the UK now. There's a preliminary deal with China. All of a sudden, the smart people, the wise people that don't think Donald Trump knows what he's talking about, are coming to grips with the notion that maybe his tariff program wasn't such a terrible idea after all. Maybe projecting strength and telling the rest of the world that we are not going to blindly proceed to go along with the status quo, maybe that's what a leader is supposed to do. And Axios, we know that's one of the worst outlets out there for bias. They had an article out on May 15th. I guess that was Thursday, right? They had an article out on May 15th that made me laugh and also want to scream. This is the headline. Brace yourselves for this one. Hard data suggests tariff-driven inflation and recession fears may be overblown, writes Courtney? I don't know how to pronounce that name, Sean. Normally, I guess it would be Courtney, but it's Courtney Brown. With major indicators from April, the month of peak tariff uncertainty now in, none show the kinds of recessionary or inflationary conditions implied by business and consumer surveys. And they always have this structure, you know, where they say why it matters over at Axios. They want to tell you why it matters. Warnings and anecdotes are taking on greater importance of signs of how tariffs are working their way through the economy. New data out Thursday showed steady retail sales and a surprising drop in wholesale prices in April. So far, so good. Now, of course, what Axios does not tell you is the real reason why there was panic is because the left and their agents embedded in the media at places like Axios, I guess Courtenay Brown is a part of this, they were all telling us that the sky was falling. Even when the hard data did not support it, even though when we knew that the president's policies were not likely to drive us off the cliff that they all said was rapidly approaching. They are liars, and they are increasingly ineffective liars because they don't have a monopoly on information anymore. All reasons for good cheer, folks, but it's why shows like the Matt Rooney Program are all the more important, because as they become more desperate, they are going to become more ferocious and tenacious with trying to advancing their mistruths and half-truths and attempts to manipulate those that have not yet woken up. So we need to redouble our efforts to reach the American people and let them know that better times are coming if we are willing to continue to work for it. I know I am. I suspect you are too. That's why you're here. Hour number one, done. But don't worry, we still have an entire other hour of the Matt Rooney Show. Vicki Flynn, Assemblywoman, LD13, joins me in just a moment for some very important New Jersey updates. Not going to want to miss this. Don't go anywhere.
WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Piazza Auto Group Studios, experience the power of one with 8 brands and 25 locations. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Live and local with Matt Rooney on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I don't know about you, but my 401k was looking pretty good on Friday. Pretty solid, folks. They told us that tariff apocalypse was going to drag us all down. But sure enough, President Trump's economic programs are proving to be a boon in the early going for the American people. Just like listening to the Matt Rooney Show is a boon for your brain. It will expand it. It's scientifically proven. Welcome back to our little show here at 1210 WPHT, our dose of dose for our bilingual listeners. Now broadcasting, if you're listening via the radio, you can listen to this show on Saturday nights. That's right. We have a new time slot, 7 to 9 p.m. on Saturday. I believe this is the former Michael Popelka slot, Sean, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah.
Michael, buddy.
Yeah, because I used to do Michael Popelka's show on Saturday nights from 7 to 10. So, yeah, you actually got a good spot.
Yeah, this is a good. We're very excited about this. And of course, as I say every episode now, don't forget, you're not limited to the radio. As much as we love seeing you listen on Saturday night, you can also check us out via the podcast of our program. It's a fun way to break it down. Listen to me whenever you want to. You can jog or yog, as the anchorman would say. Maybe you're working in the kitchen. Maybe you're commuting. Maybe you're just laying in the bath in the bubbles trying to decompress and you've had enough of the song of the whales and you need something else to soothe you and you need my melodious voice. You can listen there as well. Just make sure if it's an electronic device, it's not too close to the edge of the tub. I don't want to be responsible for any best case scenario, destroyed electronics, worst case scenario, electrocuted you. So Spotify, Apple iTunes, all the places, all the things, as the Gen Zers would say. We're going to be joined a little bit later this hour by my friend Vicki Flynn, Assemblywoman from the fighting 13th Legislative District out in Monmouth County. She's going to catch us up on some of the latest and greatest developments in the Garden State. It's a big year for New Jersey. We've got a gubernatorial primary coming up now in just a few weeks, June 10th. And then, of course, we proceed into the general election. Will New Jerseyans make a change at the end of the Phil Murphy era? Or will we double down on stupid and pick another corrupt socialist who is going to make our state truly the California of the East Coast? That's what, unbelievably, Phil Murphy ran on when he was seeking term number one back in 2017. It was a ridiculous goal at the time. Seems even more absurd 8 years on. My fingers are crossed because I live in Jersey and I pay property taxes there, folks. So hope for the best. For my sake, if for no other reason. Donald Trump's polling. I know some of you get annoyed when I talk about polling because, oh, the polls are all wrong, the polls lie, the polls are ginned up and, you know, jerked around and this, that, and the other. I get it, but I think that that's painting with a broad brush. It depends which poll we're talking about. Mark Mitchell, our buddy that we've had here on this program, the chief pollster of Rasmussen Reports, had a new survey out at the end of this week. I think it dropped on Thursday, or at least the results go through Thursday. President Trump's job approval up 3 points, 51% to 48%. Not just Rasmussen, RMG Research, they had a poll that ran, once again, concluded their surveys on May 15th. 300 registered voters. President Trump up 52% approve, 48% disapprove. You know, there's a inherent danger in doing the whole Chicken Little thing and telling everyone the sky is falling and then it doesn't. And I think that there's a little bit of that going on right now. It might be difficult to poll, but they told us, and we touched on this in hour number one with that Axios story, they told us, the media, the beautiful people, the wise people, the establishment, that President Trump's tariff policies, his attempt to reset the world economic order, was going to destroy our economy. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. Quite the opposite. It may be supercharging it. And so when you not only have concrete examples of President Trump's success, but you can compare it to the once again biased and manipulative and ultimately completely incorrect version of reality which the left tried to sell the American people, I think these things serve to just continue to wake people up. Can't think of a better way to say it, because that's what it is. They're wise to the scam. And not just because they listen to shows like this one anymore, even though we do a lot to inform the American people and make sure the wool's not pulled over their eyes, right? It's becoming self-evident, if you're a reasonably intelligent person, to figure out what it is that they're trying to do to your brain. There's a war on your brain. But now you can see for yourself. The sky did not fall. The world did not end. If anything, we're getting stronger. And you have to question why some of our own citizens don't want America to be strong. Why don't they want it to be great again? That's the question I would be asking this November or next November if I'm on a debate stage debating any of these socialist radical Democrats. You know, clearly the president's policies are working. Why don't you want them to work? Because some of this we can't really debate anymore, right? For example, whether or not your tax rate is 5% or 6%, I guess you could debate something like that in theory. You can't debate success. If something is working, then it's working. So I would take that approach. I don't like to give out free advice, right? It's antithetical to who I am as an attorney, Sean. I pay people, or people pay me for their advice, for my advice. That's how I make a living. But I'll give some free advice here anyway because I love you all so much. And if any candidates are listening, I know some of you are, you know, frame it that way. Say, like, listen, success is undeniable. We're succeeding. Why don't you want America to succeed? Why do you want a weaker America? We know the answer, because they don't believe in America. They don't think a strong, prosperous, powerful United States is good for the world. Do what Donald Trump does. Make them admit it. Reveal their true goals, their true aims. It will pay dividends, trust me. Something else that's breaking leftist brains this week. I've been talking a lot on this show about the election of a new pope over in Rome. Not just because I'm Catholic, so I have a personal interest in this stuff, but as I've said before, whether you like it or not, second only, arguably, to the President of the United States, there isn't another figure in the Western world that speaks with as much authority as the Pope. It's been that way now for, you know, maybe not quite 2,000 years, but for the entirety of modernity. And Pope Leo the 14th, who is an American, born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, he was sold to the American people by the media as somebody that would be in continuity with Pope Francis, who was to the left of Mao. That may ultimately still be true. We might be talking again in 90 days or 9 years, and I may say, oh man, the guy turned out to be another Marxist like his predecessor, Francis. But I'm telling you right now, the bloom is going to be off the rose with the mainstream legacy media guys if Leo the 14th remains on his current course. He has not said anything wacky yet. If anything, he is doubling down on some very traditional conservative beliefs. And it was reported, I believe, Friday, Pope Leo the 14th, this is the Associated Press, some of the best liars in the business, Sean. Pope Leo the 14th affirms family is based on union between a man and a woman, and the unborn have inherent dignity. Uh-oh. Somebody from Chicago is not supposed to say something like that. But that's what the Pope said. He referred to marriage as a stable union between a man and a woman. The comments were made at an event at St. Peter's Basilica, I believe. And here's some of the exact quote. For words too, not only weapons can wound and kill. In addition, no one is exempted from striving to ensure respect for the dignity of every person, especially the most frail and vulnerable, from the unborn to the elderly, from the sick to the unemployed, citizens and immigrants alike. Also continuing, the Pope said that governments... this is really going to tick some people off here. He said it was government's responsibility to build peaceable societies, above all by investing in the family founded upon the stable union between a man and a woman. Now, Francis, for those of you that don't follow the Catholic Church regularly, during the course of his pontificate, advanced an idea that the Catholic Church and priests specifically could bless gay unions, same-sex unions. And that was very controversial, obviously, inside the church, because what Pope Leo XIV just said is traditional Catholic teaching. Francis tested those boundaries. In the early going here, it's looking like the former Robert Prevost is going to begin to reel things back in. And let me say this about this Pope. We don't know him too well yet, but we know that he's not a dumb guy. Anybody that can speak as many languages as he does can't be, completely without any lights on upstairs, as the old saying goes. But he's an American, right? He's lived here. He's worked here. He understands our politics probably better than most other popes, all other popes in the history of the church have. So he knows what he's saying, and he also, I suspect, knows what impact this is going to have, not only globally, but back home and in the arena of the media. So stay tuned to this one. We may have some interesting developments coming out of the Holy See, because, look, the papacy is an absolute monarchy, right? When they get elected, they never have to go unless they want to, right? Until they pass on. So he technically doesn't really have to answer to anyone at this point except his maker. So he might surprise some people. I'm already pleasantly surprised in some ways. You are pleasantly surprised because you're enjoying another fantastic Matt Rooney show here at 1210 WPHT. Remember, not just on the radio on Saturday night, 7 to 9, but also via our podcast, wherever awesome podcasts can be found. We're going to take a break. But we're going to be back in just a minute with my good buddy, Assemblywoman Vicki Flynn. It's going to be a great conversation. Join us.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Recapping the week going by to prepare you for the week ahead. That's what we do on the show. We do it better than anyone else. And the big story this week was still the aftermath of the arrest of Newark Mayor Roz Baraka. He was arrested, I believe it was a week ago. And I'll give you the broad strokes in case you somehow missed this story. He was outside of an ICE immigration detention center in the city where he serves as mayor. And he was held in custody for several hours. And Alina Haba is throwing the book at him. They clearly intend to make an example of this lawless Democrat who is representative of, we know, plenty of politicians across this country that don't want to abide by the rule of law. They want to appease the nut jobs in their own base who want to continue Joe Biden's open borders policies. The Trump administration and Alina Haba, our new U.S. attorney in New Jersey, at least on an interim basis, not going for all of that. And then it was reported on Friday that Congresswoman McIver of New Jersey, LaMonica McIver, also of Newark, who was present, and if you look at the video, and I'm going to be careful about this because everybody's entitled to a presumption of innocence, but it certainly looks like she was mixing it up with at least one federal official. And some have said this is a scuffle. I mean, I'm going to call it what it is. They said January 6th was a riot. The video sure looked and sounded like January 6th to me, folks, right? What's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? People acting up. It looks like she may now be charged herself. A congresswoman charged for her alleged role in, again, I'm gonna say what it is. I don't care if it twists some of your underwear. It was a riot. It was a riot. And worse, right? Because some riots arise because protesters' passions are inflamed. You had a bunch of Democrats here virtue signaling and grandstanding and trying to gain an unfair upper hand in Roz Baraka's case in the Democrat primary. He was hoping to score points with voters. And if you're McIver, you're just trying to get attention, right? So it was the worst possible reason to create this type of a scuffle, a riot, whatever, outside of an ICE facility. We have some of the audio of what happened in case you missed it. And you're not going to be able to see it, obviously. But sometimes the audio, the ambiance, tells the full story. We got it for them, Sean. This is cut. Oh, did I lose my cut sheet? Hold on. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Cut number three.
Get off of her! Get off of her! You cannot push it! You cannot push it! You can't push
members of
Congress!
This is peaceful! You are fascist!
Get off of her!
This is peaceful! You are fascist! This is peaceful!
Get off of her! Get off of her! Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, did that sound peaceful to you? You heard that one young lady screaming, "Fascist! Fascist! You're fascist! This is peaceful!" It wasn't peaceful. Go find the video. I'll retweet it over on my X page. Matt Rooney NJ is my handle. So, David Wildstein and Joey Fox over the New Jersey Globe, they reported on Friday that McIver may now be charged by the U.S. attorney for this fracas at Delaney Hall in Newark, a 1,000-bed facility in the East Ward. Lots happening in New Jersey. Just when you thought there couldn't be more interesting storylines in a gubernatorial cycle, we've got this new drama. To discuss that and so much more, we're joined by a regular of this program. She is one of the more outspoken conservatives in the New Jersey Assembly. She is on the ballot with the rest of the Assembly this June. And then, of course, if she gets through June in November, she's an advocate for the Jersey Shore and the Garden State at large. And she joins us once again on our program. Vicki Flynn of the 13th Legislative District, welcome back to the Matt Rooney Show. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
No worries. It's good to be here, Matt.
Well, we're happy to have you. I know that you've been following the Delaney Hall fallout over the course of the past week, as I have, and as I think as many of our listeners have. It was only a matter of time before these whack job Democrats overstepped the line, and it looks like, at least in this Delaney Hall incident, they finally have. I'm not asking you to convict or exonerate LaMonica McIver, but I mean, did you hear a peaceful protest? Did you see a peaceful protest?
No, I mean, think about it, Matt. This followed a few days earlier in Columbia at Columbia University. We had yet one of those other protests where, you know, a group of students and non-students, you know, paraded through a library, became very disruptive, destroyed a library, did all what they've been doing, this whole disruption thing, because they think it's all protected by First Amendment. And finally, people are starting to take notice. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me, you know, where are they learning this from? This is the Democratic playbook. And I think, I don't know if you saw my tweet right after the arrest of the mayor, I tweeted that this is just nothing more than a political stunt. I actually called it a pop-up protest because that's what I think they're doing here. You know, they think this is the way you get attention. And they say, but it's just a protest. No, it's not. This is lawlessness. You know, what government official who's exercising their rights as a government official doesn't know how to do it appropriately? You want to go and inspect. You want to go see what's going on. You're an elected official. Do it properly. Do it appropriately. Don't create drama in front of a camera and think New Jersey voters don't see what's going on.
Yeah, and of course, Phil Murphy's trying to provide some cover for his party mates. His quote over at the New Jersey Globe was, LaMonica, Bonnie Watson Coleman, who's also a congresswoman, in case you don't know her. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't like her, folks. And Rob Menendez, whose claim to fame is being the son of Bob Menendez. No additional comment necessary. Murphy says, LaMonica, Coleman, and Menendez have absolute rights to inspect those facilities. And if a federal charge goes ahead, I think it's just as I said about Ras Baraka. Outrageous. Now, Vicki, I mean, neither you nor I are federal criminal attorneys, but we're both lawyers.
No.
These are members of the federal legislature. They're members of Congress. This is an ICE facility. ICE is part of the executive branch. I know Congress has oversight of certain executive agencies, right? Departments, projects, and whatever else. Do they have an absolute right to just walk into a federal facility, particularly one where they're holding detainees? I must have missed that class in law school where that was explained.
Right. Criminal detainees at best. Like, is that what they do? I didn't know they were walking around the state and inspecting jails. You know, what about where?
Right. Are you allowed to do that? Can you just go walk into a jail right now and demand access to a secure facility at a state prison because you're a state legislator? I guess so.
No, what I expect to. Like, you know, what are we doing? This is just for attention, and no one's fooled by it. Look, where were they when these veteran facilities had all of these poor veterans dying in it? Did they go and inspect those facilities then? Did they claim outrage? No. Why? Because they were the party in control.
They didn't.
They just sat on the sidelines. But, you know, they're going to raise a flag and wrap themselves, you know, around the First Amendment around them and saying that's what we're doing here. We're exercising oversight. Are you kidding me? There is so many more appropriate ways to do what they purported that they were doing. You know, where are they today when there's a strike going on our rails? Are they anywhere near that issue? Where has those federal legislators been making sure that New Jersey receives adequate funding for its rail services? I don't know. I think they've been missing in action. And now they want New Jersey to pay for that. So I am at a loss. I mean, as a governmental official as well, I was very much at a loss as to why they were there in that capacity trying to get access to an ICE facility. Rented or not, it was still a facility under the control of a federal agency, and there are about 20 other ways to exercise oversight in an appropriate way. The one way that they all chose wasn't the one.
Yeah, I know that the city of Newark has said, well, Delaney Hall has permit issues. They're alleging that there's some, I think they said something about the electrical outlets. You still can't just barge in without proper notice to a structure that's occupied by a tenant. It's not how it works. Again, that's kind of like landlord-tenant 101. So the entire thing is absurd. And I for one, hope that Alina Haba does not hold back here, because we need to restore law and order in New Jersey and in the country as a whole. And the only way to do it is to make an example of Democrats who think that they are above the law. And that's one of our number one exports, Vicky. I know you know this, in the state of New Jersey. Democrats who don't believe they are bound by anything other than their own will. I mean, it was Phil Murphy during the pandemic who said that the Bill of Rights was above his pay grade, right? That wasn't part of his decision-making process when 10,000 seniors died and one-third of our businesses were destroyed in our state. So we're going to keep a close eye on that story. Another storyline you mentioned that's out of New Jersey this week, we talked about it a little bit earlier on the program, something in the neighborhood of 350,000 daily New Jersey Transit train riders need to figure out another plan starting on Friday because of a rail strike. They were unable to reach a deal. The union wanted a pay raise. The Murphy administration, which I got to be honest with you, I've never known Phil Murphy to not want to spend money. This is the one instance where he's finally putting his foot down. I don't know why that is, why he picked this fight, but okay. And now come Monday, it's my understanding that NJ Transit has plans to supply buses to alleviate at least some of the disruption. But the last update I saw, they only had enough buses for something like 20,000 of the 100,000 estimated riders that don't have another option. They can't afford Uber. They don't have a car or access to something else. So this is a disaster. And the fact that, again, as I said, Phil Murphy likes to spend money on everything except, I guess, the one thing that would enable these people to get to work and childcare. I'm having a lot of difficulty computing how we got here, other than the fact that Phil Murphy is incompetent.
Yeah, look, these contracts have been expired for 5 years, it's my understanding. So I'm unsure as to what happened over the last 5 years. I understand they settled the contracts with their other unions that are involved with New Jersey Transit. This is the one holdout. Why is he putting his foot down? I think it's under the leadership of the new CEO, Chris Calori, who's actually putting his foot down because I think Chris understands, and I think the governor may have now had a come to Jesus moment. Where are you going to get this money? Last year, remember, in the last week of June, we approved the budget that not only resurrected the corporate business tax under a new name to tax our corporations so that we could fund New Jersey Transit, to find a new funding source for New Jersey Transit because it was so underwater. We also gave them an additional operating subsidy above and beyond prior years. So this year, the current budget proposes to give New Jersey Transit another $757 million than we did last year. So this is a lot of money. And I'm assuming the union on their side say, well, there's some money there to be had. Why don't we go after it and try to get it? This is a mess because it's poor financial planning. You didn't have the right people in the right seats making the right decisions. And now we're stuck trying to figure our way out of this. Also remember, Murphy did intervene in the Rutgers contract negotiations. I think that was also maybe last year in the last 18 months. Yeah. And we pretty much gave in on that negotiation. So why wouldn't the union go to this length to try to get what they want? Because as practice shows, they're going to get it.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, said another way, he's encouraged a lot of bad behavior over the course of many, many years. So they have every reason to expect that a governor who generally gives unions everything they wanted would do so again. But that's the one question I do have here. I mean, you know, these salaries for the train operators, they're saying they're underpaid. The administration is saying not so much. I mean, do we think that there is a reasonable compromise to get these trains running again?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm hoping, my understanding is that they're going to meet on Sunday and try to work out a final deal. So that's my understanding. But if not, you're going to have, and it's strange timing, with weeks out of a contested primary, to have the entire, like, the towns I represent ride the Jersey Shore coastline. That line is now shut down.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right.
Unless they figure out a way, and that means we're 1 week out from Memorial Day weekend, where people do use our rail line to come and travel down the shore. So that's good. There's so many rippling effects that's occurring here. And to me, it feels like the union has a lot on their side, a lot of pressure points on their side that puts us financially in a bad situation as a state in settling this deal. But I'm going to remain hopeful. Who would have thought we would have had a Catholic Pope just a few weeks ago? So from America. So hopefully, we always have a Catholic Pope, but one from the United States. So
yeah. Well, that's a point that some might argue, but... But your point is taken. No, you're right. Anything can happen. And look, here's what I hope. You know, Latham Tyver, who, for those of you who don't know your New Jersey geography, he's from Burlington County in our core listening area. He represents the 8th Legislative District, state senator. He had a bill to audit NJ Transit because some of the stories and some of the examples of waste and misuse of funds that have cropped up in public reports in recent years are hair-raising. I mean, just one example, NJ Transit blew $500 million recently on new offices and interior design.
Yep.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, regardless of whether or not these operators are entitled to more money, some of that $500 million would have come in handy right about now. We might have a lot of people who don't have to lose money, shift work, because they can't afford to get to work because of this avoidable transit strike. So just another thing to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, as this as this situation unfolds. We'll see what happens on Sunday. Now, we are in the middle of an election here in New Jersey. Last year, we focused a lot on the western banks of the Delaware River. New Jersey's about to elect a new governor because Phil Murphy is mercifully, thank God in heaven, term limited. Every member of the assembly is also on the ballot this year, including you, Vicky. You're seeking re-election alongside your running mate, Jerry Scharfenberger, who's also been on this program many times. President Trump stepped into the breach this past week and endorsed Jack Cittarelli. Some wondered whether he was going to issue an endorsement. That has now been put to bed. Where do you see election 2025 as we sit here today?
For the primary or the general?
The whole thing. Let's start with the primary, because we talked about earlier in the program the latest Emerson poll that has Jack Cittarelli allegedly ahead of Bill Spadia by 26 points. I know some pro-Spadia supporters have said, well, the polls are often wrong. That's not an unfair point, but every single public and private poll that I've seen, and I see them all, folks, all point in the same direction. And most of these surveys were taken before the president's endorsement. Case in point, I think about a day or two of that Emerson poll showing Jack up 26 points was taken before the president threw up his post on Truth Social offering his endorsement.
Yeah, I think, and I'm out on the field, we're campaigning. I feel like those polls are very accurate. I don't think they're far off. Yeah, I don't always trust the polls, and I don't purport that people should trust the polls, because here's the thing. I think Jax is really taking off, and his candidacy is taking off like it did a few years ago. My concern is turnout. I don't want these poll numbers to dissuade people from voting in what is already a low turnout election, and that is our primaries. This is a huge election. It's really critical. It's the first time we're having a primary under this ballot, which was an attempt by the Democrats to destroy party affiliation. Good job on them and Andy Kim.
And let's just remind everyone what you're referring to if they're not following. So New Jersey, this is foreign to our Pennsylvania friends, and if you're listening in other states, we used to have lines. So the endorsed county party back slate would all be in one column that the county committee members would get together and they would endorse someone like Vicky. They'd all be there in a line. And then everyone else who decided to run, which is certainly their right, would be elsewhere on the ballot. That has now been eliminated in New Jersey. Everyone's bunched up by office in individual little blocks, right?
Correct. With very long slogans and some numbers and letters to further confuse the ballot. Yes, that's what we're doing. That's what we're working under. So our loyal soldier voters on both sides of the aisle are going to be coming to the ballot boxes in June and seeing a ballot that they've never seen before. So we have that going against us. But I don't want people to, and it is a concern I have, Matt, so I'm glad you brought it up, and I hope everyone listening will heed my request that they get out and vote, our Republican friends, because I do look, Ryan Debicki, I'll give him a shout out. I love that he posts those, the vote by mail numbers every day, and then he'll start doing the early voting once early voting starts. Right now, the Democrats, I mean, I don't think they're voting at the highest levels just yet. I feel like there's confusion still in their electorate as to who to choose. So, but I do feel like they're voting at rates a little higher than Republicans, and that has me a bit concerned about turnout for the primary. So we still have time. We got an extra week due to the fact that there was a Jewish holiday falling on the first Tuesday of the month in June. So we have till June 10th. To get the vote out, but it's really critical that we do. But I feel like the polling numbers are accurate in terms of Jack has a wide margin of victory anticipated for June. I find the Democratic primary more interesting, and I am following it with very huge interest. And I talk to my Democratic friends because I feel like that race is, someone's going to get maybe 20-21% of the vote, and it's going to be the Democratic candidate for governor. I think that's amazing, actually. Amazing in an ironic way, that you're only going to have to need 20% of the vote to win to then run for governor. It's interesting to me.
Yeah, you were talking about the fact that we have a new pope. In order to become pope, you have to get 2/3 of the College of Cardinals. The idea that the next governor of New Jersey might get out of a primary with only 20-25% of the vote somewhere in there, it's a little scary, to be honest with you, given how crazy the Democrat base is. It looks like, and this Emerson poll I mentioned a minute ago, has Mikey Sherrill out in front, but not by a ton, a lot of undecided still. And if you look at the most recent totals coming in from various counties, like, for example, 1/3 of the ballots that have been returned come from Sweeney-endorsed counties. So it's very interesting. On the Republican side, let's look and see, where's Monmouth at? In Monmouth County, only a little under 3,400 ballots returned from Republicans. So you guys got to step it up out there.
Yeah, no, we're on the average, the statewide average, but I know we're going to do better. I think once we get past Memorial Day, we'll see an uptick and we'll turn it in, but we'll get nice returns. But I find the polling very interesting. Because at this point in time, I find the Democratic race more interesting, because I think that's going to help us. Whoever they select will really dictate how we run our, how we win in November, in a way. And I feel like Mikey Sherrill is just not taking off. And if she becomes their candidate, I think she's going to have a lot of trouble, because I don't think she has a familiarity with the statewide issues that you need to have to be a strong governor candidate.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't like Phil Murphy, for obvious reasons. No one that's listening to this program is going to be surprised by that. I wouldn't call him a stupid man. Incompetence and intelligence in this arena are distinct concepts, right? He doesn't do a good job of running the state of New Jersey, but clearly he's an intelligent guy. Mikey, I'm not really sure she has that most important of all characteristics for a high elected official, especially one in the executive branch. She doesn't seem to know what she doesn't know. And those politicians are always the most dangerous. Someone that does know what they don't know and regularly comes on here and gives us some very valuable perspective on the state of New Jersey is Vicki Flynn. Again, Assemblywoman, New Jersey's 13th legislative district out in Monmouth County, her running mates, Jerry Scharfenberger. Vicki, remind us how we can find you online.
Oh, boy. We're on Twitter, ASW Flynn. You can find me there. I'm on Facebook, Assemblywoman Flynn. And Instagram, we have an LD13 page. You can find me there. And we have a Vote for Vicki Flynn page. We're all over. We're out there getting the message out because we need strong Republicans back in the governor's office, and we need more of them in the assembly so that we could start turning the state around, or to use a phrase from my friend Matt, save Jersey.
You're always welcome to steal my intellectual property when it's complimentary, my friend. Vicki Flynn, everyone, Assemblywoman Vicki Flynn, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And if we don't talk before, we'll have you back on after the primary.
Sounds great. Thanks, Matt. Have a great next week.
You too. Happy Memorial Day weekend. A little bit early, folks. You are listening to the Matt Rooney Show on 1210 WPHT. Quick timeout, and we'll be back to wrap up this episode in a second.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT on demand.
I had someone ask me, Matt, happy Memorial Day weekend. When you say that, is it really happy? We're commemorating the deaths, we're memorializing those who died serving our country. I understand the point, but let me just throw this out there for a second. And we'll elaborate a little bit more on this in the time to come here as we lead into the holiday. While I appreciate the point, remember that we say Happy Easter, right? I mean, we're celebrating someone, Jesus Christ, coming back from the dead after they were violently murdered by the government. Right? We say happy in many different contexts when we're commemorating something that even though there is sadness about it, right? Something good came of the sacrifice. So when we say happy Memorial Day weekend, yes, we got to remember that that weekend's not just about hot dogs and hamburgers and going to the beach or whatever else you choose to do. The fun of the parade, you know, veterans throwing candy to the crowd. It's all good stuff, and there's nothing wrong with it. We have to remember who the day is designed to honor. But their sacrifice is also something that it has enabled us to enjoy the fruits of this country for nearly 250 years. That is a happy thing. Not that we lost these men and women, but that their sacrifice has not been in vain. There wouldn't be a Matt Rooney Show without all of the veterans, both those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice and also those of you who thankfully came home, right? We would be a very different country. We'd have a very different world without everything that those of you who have laid it on the line for this nation have done over the course of its 250-year history. So I say it often, but if you're a veteran listening to this program, or certainly if you're the family of a veteran who went overseas or to a foreign theater and never came back, we love you, God bless you, and you're never far from our thoughts. Memorial Day weekend or any other time of year. One thing I want to touch on super quick before the end of the show, on Friday, we found out that the big, beautiful bill, ladies and gentlemen, is in jeopardy. It failed to pass through a House Budget Committee hearing. It's the usual characters, folks. You know, Chip Roy, Andrew Clyde, Ralph Norman of South Carolina. Look, I've spent a lot of energy on this program talking about how there are
incredible opportunities ahead for this country, for our region, in election 2025 and beyond. But never, ever, 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 for a little extra emphasis there, underestimate the GOP's ability to steal defeat from the jaws of victory. Right? That's what they do. It's what they're expert at. Let's get this bill going, guys. Come on. Enough already. I talked about it at the very beginning of this show. We cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Now, look, I am, as a limited government conservative, very sympathetic to the idea that at some point on spending and some other issues, you gotta draw the line. But we are making so many improvements in so many arenas in how our government operates, DOGE being a great example, that we cannot allow the president's agenda to die on the vine to serve the vain purposes of a few members of Congress, right? Because they want to say they are the purest of the flock. It's self-defeating behavior. And so I'm just talking for myself here, folks. I mean, I encourage you to reach out to your legislators and say, listen, I don't care how you do it, but the president's agenda must move forward. Enough of this nonsense. We cannot give the Democrats the opening they are waiting for. They are on their rear ends here. President Trump has them off balance. We cannot do what we did back in the first Trump term and fight each other and lose our credibility. There's no other way to say it. Maybe not ending on the happiest note, folks, but keep fighting for this greatest nation in God's creation. It's worth it. I am Matt Rooney. This is the Matt Rooney Show. We will see you on the next episode in just a week's time. But until then, enjoy what's left of spring. Summer is upon us. Great things are coming for this country. I want you to believe it. But until we meet again, stay strong out there.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.